Hello and welcome to the C&D podcast. I'm Jo Shorthouse from C&D and you're listening to series 5 of A Coffee With, a podcast series where we sit down with some of pharmacy's most inspirational women to talk about all facets of women in pharmacy. In each episode, I'll be chatting to a different woman associated with pharmacy about their career, the issues of the day, as well as the industry in general. Over the next 4 weeks, we'll hear plenty of words of wisdom. So pour yourself a cup of your favourite hot beverage and join me for the latest instalment of A Coffee With. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Janet Morrison, the Chief Executive of Community Pharmacy England. As CEO, Janet is responsible for all strategic and operational dimensions of the organisation. She works closely with the committee and the staff team to develop the organisation's strategy. She leads negotiations and responds to new policy developments, as well as managing senior stakeholder relationships and developing those crucial future ambitions for the community pharmacy sector. Janet joined CPE in March 2022, having enjoyed a career in public and not-for-profit sectors. For the last 15 years, she has been CEO at Independent Age and the Black Stork Charity, which is working to establish a national NHS rehabilitation centre. Janet has been awarded an OBE for her work with older people and addressing loneliness and isolation. Janet, welcome to the podcast and thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
I think it's really refreshing to have you on here today, as you're not a pharmacist yourself, and you can give us a really nice fresh perspective on some of the issues that women in pharmacy are facing today. I'd just like to start off really by asking why you decided to join the community pharmacy sector, because you have been working in the charity sector for quite a long time. What was it that made you think community pharmacy, that's somewhere I'd like to be?
Yeah, you know, I've worked in the public sector and I've worked in the charity sector. When I was in the charity sector, one of the key things that I was doing was working with older people and people who needed social care support. And we very much talked about how to get care as close as possible to those people in the community. And we were always talking about lobbying and influencing the thinking about the future for social care and for health services. And yet in all those conversations, we never talked about pharmacy. So I got approached about this job and I suddenly sort of thought, well, actually, aren't we taking for granted the fact that there are all these pharmacies in the community that are really close to patients? They're really close to the public and they do this amazing job, but they seem to be really overlooked and taken for granted. And I guess my own personal experience had been that during the pandemic, my father is 94 and I had to take him for his vaccinations and I took him to a pharmacy with these consultation rooms and who were doing an amazing service and got me vaccinated at the same time. And I suddenly sort of thought there's this potential which is already there. So I guess that really made me think, why don't we think about pharmacy more and the valuable role it plays? And I guess my background has always been in policy influencing and relationship building and trying to make change. So I guess it was a combination of getting it in terms of the value of community pharmacy and then thinking we could do better in terms of getting the value that we deliver recognised and get a better deal for the pharmacies because they've obviously got huge potential and value to the community.
And when you, obviously that's kind of from looking on the outside in. So when you eventually did join the industry 2 years ago, what were your first impressions kind of from the inside, as it were? Did those impressions change or was it an even bigger challenge than you thought it might have been?
I think, well, there are quite a lot of observations, I guess. One of the things was to recognise the multitude of skills that business owners were having to use. So it's not just purely clinical skills, it's also the skills of running a business, managing staff, providing valued advice and support and clinical services. And they're really combining an awful lot of skills with a lot of professional care for people, but also with a lot of business enterprise and entrepreneurialism. So that was pretty pretty powerful and impressive. I guess one of my other observations was how hard everyone was working. I really felt the intensity of the pressure. I think when I arrived, there was a bit of burnout post-COVID, but actually the pressure hasn't let up. And in fact, it's got worse in many ways. So that was noticing how hard they worked and how what a balancing act it was. And I guess from the perspective of the job that I do at Community Pharmacy England, it was also recognising how different every pharmacy is. And that's not just between the independent and the large multiples, but the variety of different ways of working, partially because they're responding to community need, but also because they've just developed and grown in different ways. And that kind of struck me. There was massive diversity there, and that has massive strengths, of course, but also big challenges, because I've got to reflect all of those in the work that we do, which is trying to negotiate on their behalf. And that means that that can sometimes be quite challenging.
This whole podcast series is going out in March, which is obviously to mark International Women's Day and Women's History Month. I was just wondering what your impressions were of the gender balance and the kind of equality within community pharmacy. Did you have any observations on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you go into pharmacies in the high street and all the variety of them, I think you'll see that there's lots of women working in those pharmacies. And I think you'll also see there's a lot of diversity in terms of minority ethnic communities and reflecting the communities they're working in. So I saw a lot of that. But I think, as in many sectors of the economy, when you start getting into the structures and the representation, then actually it's less representative of that spread. I think that there is something there about saying, well, is there enough of access, representation, enough of a pipeline for everyone to be able to contribute at different levels, whether in LPCs or the sector bodies or our own body? Is there enough of access so that we are refreshed, that we have the diversity of thinking, and that that we get the improvement in our decision making? So I think that's a bit of a challenge for us, like any other. There's lots of sectors like that in the economy. I think it is a challenge for us. And I think certainly at CPE, we're always saying, you know, we would welcome to have fresh thinking, fresh people coming and getting involved. We want to think about widening those opportunities, not just through our committee, but through working groups and other ways of working. But also we need to encourage a diverse pool of people who want to put their names forward and want to come and work with us. Because I think I was listening to the COVID inquiry, and someone said that one of the things in number 10, one of the people who gave evidence said there wasn't enough diversity in the decision making in number 10. And that meant they didn't understand all of the implications. I come from a policy background. Policy is much stronger and more thought through when you have a variety of views and influences and ideas put in. There's no right answer, but there's lots of amalgamation of views and attitudes. So I think that's the risk, is we don't refresh the pool and we don't reflect all the communities we serve as well as we should, then actually we're not going to make the best kind of decisions or come up with the best ideas.
I think you've really hit the nail on the head where you were talking then about diversity of thought, because you only get diversity of thought if those diverse views are represented. So it's diversity of thought and representation at the highest levels. And I was looking at some, the most recent data I could get hold of, it's GPHC data from 2022, and it shows that, you know, as we kind of would think, 60% of pharmacists are women and just over 85% of pharmacy technicians are female. So, you know, so far so good in terms of balancing things. But then when we start to look up the ranks, as it were, only 36% of senior pharmacy leaders are women, which is quite a big jump from 60% to 36%. So how do you think the industry can start to perhaps balance in terms of leadership with male and female views?
Well, I think it needs to be the pathways all the way through in terms of everyone working hard to firstly, refresh the talent pool. So that means that people shouldn't be staying on forever. You should make sure that vacancies are created all the way through in terms of the different, whether that's in LPCs or in sector bodies or indeed in Community Pharmacy England. I think we need to be encouraging people to take part, and we need to think about the barriers to taking part and think about how the ways that we operate could end up being more difficult for people with childcare responsibility, for example, or whatever else. So we need to make sure that all of the circumstances are there. And we need to just be encouraging people to say, we want to see the widest range of people coming forwards to be able to join the, you know, join the discussions, represent their areas of interest and think, you know, in our case at Community Pharmacy England, on behalf of the whole wider sector and the impact of the work. So I think there's lots of things that we can do to encourage that. I mean, at Community Pharmacy England, I guess we're kind of blessed in one sense. You might see it otherwise. We've got a woman as the chair and a woman as the CEO. And we've got on our committee, I think we've got five women plus the chair. So we've got a bit of way to go there to improve that. But we just need to make sure it's that we're encouraging people to take part and that we're seeing that fresh blood has an opportunity to be involved.
I mentioned when I was introducing you about, you know, you were developing future ambitions for Community Pharmacy. And obviously we were just talking then about, you know, kind of still work to do on getting balance right between male and female equity and equality. So could you share some of your ambitions for the Community Pharmacy sector? Is there anything you can kind of, any big picture thinking you can let us in on?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the obvious thing that everyone would hope Community Pharmacy England is absolutely obsessed with is about having a sustainable future where businesses can actually see a plan ahead, invest in their businesses and know that they'll grow. And that's really important. I think also, and I think we're starting to see it with the Pharmacy First investment, but that actually Community Pharmacy is seen as being a really key player in primary care, and it's integrated in that, and that it can do much more in terms of clinical services that will help patients, be a front door for the NHS, and do more, for example, in medicine optimization, in prevention, and potentially in long-term condition management. So definitely a clinical services future. I think the ambition should be, therefore, and you need that underlying funding and investment to be there, but it needs to be a great place to work for people to, pharmacists and their teams, to have careers and grow and develop, and to be a destination of choice in the future for independent prescribers. So that's linked again to there being clinical services that they can be involved with and can really feel they can have a really good career in. And I think also I'd like to see it as a sector. I completely understand why it's quite a fractious sector. There's because people are under so much pressure and competition. But I think I'd like to see us being able to be more united with our shared goals to make sure that we are reflecting our professional values and competencies in the best possible way and the most persuasive way. Because I think whenever there's kind of discord, that gives the opportunity, other people are watching. Other people are getting an impression of us as healthcare professionals. So I think it's really important that we don't give anyone an opportunity to say they're not up to scratch or they're not to be taken seriously. So I'd like to see us being more united and that, you know, Community Pharmacy feels that is more valued. It's not taken for granted. It's a critical part of the system. And of course, the most important part of that is that it's valued, it's trusted, and it holds the confidence of patients and the public that this is a place that will really cares about me and that is trying to get the best healthcare outcomes for me. Because that's everything. We won't get the investment if we can't prove that we're really focused on the patient and the outcomes we can deliver for them.
And I guess it goes back to what you were saying before about sustainability. People, you know, want the sustainable future within pharmacy and to be able to have a career within pharmacy, be it in community or other sectors.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that it isn't only us. It's part of a career path that could be really enriched by having experience in the other parts of the sectors, in, you know, PCNs and in hospitals, but also that community pharmacy is also a place where people can really see, I can use the whole of my professional competence to help patients in a really valuable way. And also that I'll be able to see those patients and be able to build relationships with those patients, which I think is the added value in community pharmacy.
Yeah. As I mentioned before, obviously, we're doing this series of podcasts to mark International Women's Day and Women's History Month. And the theme for International Women's Day this year is Inspire Inclusion. So I was wondering, things we're talking about, you know, kind of inspiring other people within their careers, if you could just tell me a little bit about your career that led you up to CPE, and maybe we could inspire some inclusion in some of our listeners today.
Right. Well, I guess the things I'd say about my career is that I was always the sort of person who felt like if that's not going to be sorted, I ought to kind of try and sort it out and find solutions. And I was always keen to build really open and honest relationships. And I think that's really what my career has been built on, is being able to do that, to get under the skin of a problem, understand it, and then to be able to promote solutions and build the relationships you need to influence the future. And I guess I think one of the things that's been really critical, you can imagine walking into Community Pharmacy England, not having any background in pharmacy, that's a massive learning thing. But I think throughout your career and your development, you need to keep learning all of the time. And I think it's important to reflect on, and I certainly was lucky to go to a leadership program actually at the Windsor Leadership Process, where you could look at, lots of leaders would come and talk to you from different sectors, and you could think about, what was it about their story that appealed to me? What did I understand about leadership from that? What would I take away from that that I could do differently or better? And I think that being able to look at sources of lots of different people, but to say, you know, what's inspiring about that? How would that work with me? And to also understand, and it sounds kind of cliche, but how to be authentic about your own leadership. So I'm not going to be like you, but I can think about my strengths and weaknesses and how I can do the job that I want to do using my values, which is really important to me in all the jobs that I've done, and that relationship building as well. So I guess I've had lots of inspiration through the years, but I've also been given opportunities. I've got to reflect on that people have just said, oh, actually, we haven't got someone to do that. Well, let's give Janet a chance. And I've had quite a few opportunities like that. So I think that sometimes, and we're all guilty of it, but sometimes we set the bar really high as to what we expect people to have already done. And actually, we need to look at potential, and we need to say, you know, are they aligned with what we're trying to do? Have they got some evidence of that? But also give space for potential. So I guess it's kind of, there isn't one thing that's made a difference. I'm not at the beginning of my career. I'm quite a long way through it. But that's always trying to find things that will inspire you, that you can think, would I take that away? What can I learn from that? Would that work in my setting? But also just listening to the most interesting ideas that you can, and make sure that you're not fishing in a small pond, but you're looking as wide as possible for inspiration. And, you know, I think that's it. Keep open, keep learning, look for people who, from whom you can get examples, you can get ideas about ways in which that might be helpful to you to improve your path, and also ask for help from people. I've done in the past, I haven't done it here, obviously I'm new to this sector, but I've done mentoring in the past where people have asked me to help them. And actually what was interesting, you know, who asked me most were women with young families who knew that I'd had a family and had a career, and who wanted help and advice to say, how do you balance it? How do you do it? How do you cope with office politics or this or that or the other? And I think people are often really willing to help if you just ask for some time and some help.
I think being really truthful about your situation and being really honest and saying, how do I actually do this with maybe a smaller amount of time if you have to juggle a young family, as you were saying, it's just asking for help, but being really truthful about it and just laying it all out there.
Other people, how did you do it? How do you juggle it? How do you make sure? Because I think women who have children always worry whether they're doing anything well enough. Am I good enough? And you always feel like that your something is maybe losing out because you're trying to balance all those things. But I mean, my kids are older now, but I mean, certainly I felt quite reassured because I always felt like I wasn't doing enough for my kids. But my daughter sort of said to me, you know, when she was younger, she sort of said, oh, when I grow up, I want to be like you. I want to have, you know, a great career and have lots of friends and have a fun life, you know. And I think that's, you sort of think, oh, okay, I feel a bit reassured now. So I think lots of people feel, and lots of women might feel that they're not good enough or they might question themselves more. These are really good qualities of self-awareness and questioning and learning. And if you can recognize that in yourself, then you can also ask for help and or ideas or clues, and people will give you time to help you.
I think we're also very good at imposter syndrome as well, not just females, but men as well, especially, you know, perhaps we go into a step up the ladder that you don't particularly feel 110% ready for. You're always kind of second guessing yourself. So I think confidence and authenticity, you've hit the nail on the head there with two of those qualities. So that's really, really good advice. So just one final question, and that was about female role models, because I know we talked about mentorship, about you've done that in earlier parts of your career. But was there anybody that particularly inspired you? Do you have any female role models, you know, obviously perhaps in business, but perhaps not? Is there anybody that springs to mind?
Do you know, I couldn't say there was one person who I thought, that's really an inspiration to me. I think there's been lots of people who've been inspiration to me, and it might have been, and they might be women. So certainly I worked with some chairs of organizations who were women who I really respected for their judgment and their leadership. And I sort of thought, I would often find myself just watching and thinking, what are they doing there? How did they manage that? And learning from that. So there's been quite a few women who I can think of, a chair in one of my charities who I worked with for several years, who have very sound judgment. She didn't get overexcited about things. She was calm and she knew how to draw people together to find solutions. There was another woman who I watched as a chair of an organization that I was on as a trustee, and I was interested to watch how she dealt with difficult people. I thought that was really interesting. That's useful, and not only in the pharmacy sector, but in other sectors as well. So I think when I went on this leadership process, I ended up being in a group which was a sort of mentoring group, and it was people from all different areas. So it might be there were people from the armed forces, people from government, people from business, people from charity sector, all of these different sectors, public sector, health sector. And we would meet maybe five times a year. We had a mentor with us who was a fantastic man. But we would talk about, this is the issue that I've got, and everyone would contribute ideas and thinking. And actually, whatever sector we were in, most of the problems were universal. They might be about strategy. They were mostly about people, whether they were people above us, below us, or working alongside us, you know. Most problems were universal. And actually, you found that there is a lot to learn about leadership in lots of different sectors. So I think it's been a combination. So I couldn't really say one person or even two people. I think I've just always sort of looked out and said, I like the way they did that. How did they do that? Or I'm interested about how they're occupying this challenging role. What can I learn from that? And I think that's always true of even in my committee and sitting alongside all of them, is to notice the strengths and skills that they have and say, what can I observe from that that would be useful to me? So I think, you know, where do I fill the gaps in the things that I'm not so good at, but I can see that other people have got some really clever ways about navigating choppy waters. I think that's really valuable.
That brings us to the end of our episode today. And thank you to Janet Morrison of Community Pharmacy England for joining us. We discussed the ways in which community pharmacy can include a diversity of voices at the very top of the industry and her ambitions for the future of the sector. Janet shared her lessons in leadership, as well as who she has taken inspiration from throughout her varied career. For more news and updates on C&D's Women in Pharmacy Group, please check out the C&D community via our website, chemistanddruggist.co.uk. Thank you for listening.